Hour number two of Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game, taking you until 3 o'clock, the special summer hours. If you've been in and out of pocket, Caroline Fenton has moved on from the show. We congratulate her. Derek Mason off on vacation. In fact, they are both in Europe right now, and we have pinpointed, Nick, that they are texting, because we're on the text chain. I don't know why. They could eliminate us from the equation, but they're both in Paris. Who knows? Maybe their families will be hanging out.
They're just showing off.
Yeah, they're rubbing it in.
Yeah. D-Mace's got his kids out there. Caroline, but Caroline's got a new gig when she comes back. We'll be hearing from her in the future, but not as a regular on the show. So in the meantime, Willie Donick here with you, along with Hal Gill, who's been guest hosting throughout the week here. And so we decided with the big, big game six tonight, we wanted to get some good hockey perspective. And a good friend of Hal's, Andrew Raycroft, who is a former goalie, teammate of Hal Gill's for the Boston Bruins, now works with the Bruins on Nesson, analyzes their games. And you can also hear him on the NHL radio, the Sirius XM channel, which I do often as a co-host there. He's a frequenter there.
Yeah.
Excellent
busy
analyst.
Man.
Yeah, he's a busy
man. He was even doing college hockey.
I'm sure he's very busy tonight as well with big game six. But, Andrew, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Nothing to it. Happy to be on.
All right. Well, first, just give us your thoughts on game six tonight. I think I'm sure up in Boston, even though the Bruins are out and it's disappointing that they didn't get further, I have to believe there's a lot of curiosity. The audience for this game on a broad scale is going to be good for hockey, especially with being on network TV. It's free, and that can only be good for the league.
It is only good for the league, and I'm excited that the Oilers have pushed back here the last couple of games, and now as Skillsy knows, in the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 6 is must-win for both teams. We've got to that point, and that's what's exciting, and not to mention, and probably most important, we all get to see the greatest hockey player on the planet playing in these games, and he has certainly showed up the last couple of nights.
We had a great conversation yesterday because we had Jeff Fisher, the longtime Tennessee Titan coach, and it was just a different outside perspective, and we were just talking about when you're coaching or playing against guys who are just the super freaks, right? They're not just superstar players. We're beyond that with McDavid and just trying to contain them because those are the guys that over time they're going to have those great moments. So it's interesting to watch McDavid on this stage from that perspective.
Yeah, it's nuts. And what he's been able to do to get 4 points in both of the last two games, first time that's ever happened, it's special. And yeah, if you're a Florida Panther fan, you have to hope that and assume that he's not going to get four tonight, but can you contain him to just one? If you just give him one, maybe two, you have a chance. Any more than that, he's taken over the game.
Razor, you know Canada is buzzing. Is it all of Canada though, or is it like can we see Calgary cheering on Edmonton? Like, is that even like, because it's got to be Canada against the world. Canada needs to win. McDavid needs to win. Is that the buzz that you think is happening up there? You're going up there pretty soon too.
I'm up there in a couple weeks. My buddies they're pulling for Canada. Of course, I don't think people in Calgary are per se. But the other thing is too. I think now that it's gotten to this point, I think that's even the people that didn't want to see Edmonton win at the start might want to see the comeback story and see what McDavid's doing and say we'd really like to actually see him win. And the other thing is, too, is Florida's easy to not like. And the more you watch them, the less you kind of want them to win, too. So, yeah, I would say all of Canada at least wants to win tonight to see Game 7.
That sounds like a bitter Bruins fan.
Florida's
easy not to like. You just love Kachuk with his mouthpiece hanging out. That's a face you want to punch.
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. seeing them – 6 times this year and 7 times last year. Everyone in Boston, I can promise you, wants Edmonton to win.
So what do you think? Would you almost – I can only imagine the weight of Game 7 after you were ahead 3-0. So I floated this as a theory out yesterday, Andrew, of is it almost better to be the road team right now if you're the Panthers despite all of the hoopla and things like that, because you're away from everybody, you're isolated, you're not hearing it every day from what's going on. You guys have blown the lead. What's happening? I almost think their better chance of winning is tonight.
I agree. I agree 100%. I think they're this game more than even the last two, and what you would think, especially in game seven, is their this is a game no one's expecting them to win. And this is the first time they've played that role in this series, and I think it does suit them to be in Canada, to be in their little shelter. And now they've gone away from having to get people out, right? They probably tried to get people out in game four. Maybe you'll see the Cubs. Certainly in game five, I'm sure Gilsey knows this, being in the finals. Everybody calling, we want to see the Cubs. Now they're not getting that. Everybody's probably nervous in their circles. No one wants to talk to any of those guys in the circle because everyone's gotten nervous. And I think that can play a huge role for them in relieving some of the pressure. Now, if they go down early in this game or lose this game, then now you have the weight of the world on your shoulders because you don't want to be that team that blew a 3-0 lead.
Oh, the worst. Just the worst.
Oh, my God. That would be – I mean, they're tight right now, right? Like, they're nervous, but they can talk themselves out of it a little bit. But if they lose this one, they're not talking themselves out of feeling like they're chokers.
Yeah, just crawl into a hole until this next season. Yeah. Hey, Willie, we got to shift gears here because we got to get Razor's goalie thoughts.
Yes,
because we got stuff going on here. We yes. Of course we have Saros, Lankinen would be a free agent, and then we have I don't know if you've followed Askarov and seen what Yaroslav Askarov is doing in Milwaukee. I'm sure you've seen the videos of him bench pressing the goal. I know you wanted to do stuff like that when you were playing.
I wasn't strong enough.
But, you know, we just wanted to get your thoughts on the goaltending circuit that's going on. We can start off with Ullmark and Swayman. What's the story there?
So I'll ask you guys questions on the national stuff at the end of this. But Ullmark seems to be the next domino. I know as much as Linus has been great for the Bruins and they love him, I think he's a big piece. He's the next piece, it feels like, in goal in the league. And I think the Bruins would like to be able to move on from him just to have the $5 million to spend elsewhere, knowing that Jeremy Swayman's going to get a big ticket and he's the guy. He's certainly the guy of the future here. The way he played in the playoffs and his character is number one material. So yeah, it feels like the Bruins are going to try and do everything they can to move Ullmark. It's gotten a little tighter with the market, move with Markstrom, New Jersey getting their guy, LA getting their guy.
Yeah.
So there's only
Markstrom. There wasn't much to give up for Markstrom, I didn't think. I mean,
well, that's what's kind of interesting. Do the Bruins take a fifth round pick just to move on from Linus, or are they holding that value and maybe see that an opportunity later in the season? I guess that time will tell quickly on what they think. But from my point of view, I would take a little less to move on. I that's kind of my view. Probably not the same in Nashville, guys. I assume if you're moving on from UC, you want everything, whatever any team's going to give you. And then with the Askarov stuff, it's not the end of the world to have him and Saros together and have Saros on a deal, have some security there, and you might be able to move on from those guys later. I'm curious where you guys are with that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that because we have questions for you being a goalie that came up at an early age. There's so many pieces to this. When is a guy ready?
Little Razor was thrown to the wolves.
And did quite well, right?
Won the rookie of the year. He was our savior for a while. It just, you know, what were you, 19 years old when you came? 20 years old?
Just turned 20.
Turned 20 and he got thrown in. And
wow.
Mike Keenan was asking him to save the Bruins season.
Been asking sort of everybody when we have these conversations about the trend of needing two goalies.
Yeah, we talked to Elliot Friedman yesterday. We were talking about the trend. I mean, how many games did you play in Toronto? You're up like 75, and we lost all the seven other games that you didn't play, we lost and missed the playoffs.
72 games in 06-07. I'm looking at the stats right
now. He played. But I don't think goalies can do that anymore. So the trend, I think, has turned to, you know, you can't just have a one and a two. You need a 1A, 1B. So, and I think that's kind of what you're getting at. It's not a bad thing to have Askarov around and then have Saros and him balance it. It's not the worst thing ever. Do you think they're trending towards two goalies that you need to have?
Yeah, you do. And I think Saros is, you know, he's kind of bucked that trend the last few years. But I think the reality is he'll be even better when he's only playing 55. And you have a young guy who can learn a lot in those 30 other games and injuries and taking a week on or 2 weeks on as a young guy. But not
and getting the practice time as well, right?
Yeah, and just learning the league, right? It being on the plane and flying and traveling and learning, Askarov's certainly ready for that and needs to be in the NHL. Like he absolutely needs to be in the NHL, and I think it wouldn't be the worst thing if he takes 10 more starts off Saros' plate. I think you're going to get better goaltending from both of them doing that.
Because you went through it. What's the adjustment? The adjustment from, because I know the AHL guys, they can shoot. They can pick corners. They got great shots. But there's something different about an NHL player, the delivery, the way they shoot, the way they set up a pass and sell shot and then pass. Can you explain the difference? Because everyone's looking at Askarov and saying, this guy's awesome. You got to put him out there. But it's a big jump. And can you explain what a goalie's looking at for that jump?
Yeah, and for me, it's the nights you don't feel that good, that when you're in the minors, you can get away with it because, yeah, there's great players there, and it's a great league, and it's really hard because it's chaotic at times. But you're on a lot of teams, the third and fourth lines, when you're a guy like Askarov, you're saying they're not scoring on me no matter what. Where in the NHL, the third and fourth lines, they can tear you apart for three or four goals on any given night when you're not feeling good. So it's learning how to only give up two or three goals in the National Hockey League when you're not feeling good. The talent he has when he's good and he feels great, no one's, you know, you're going to make a bunch of saves and you're going to win. It's Tuesday night and you're not really feeling it and you have to find a way to get your team a 3-2 win. That's what you need to learn, and you really don't know how a goalie will handle that, and you don't really know what that is as a goaltender until you do it. And that for me is what the experienced young guys need to learn and have.
Andrew Raycroft is with us, longtime NHL goalie for the Bruins, for the Maple Leafs, a couple other teams thrown in there, now an analyst for Nesson up in Boston. It does a lot of national coverage on SiriusXM NHL radio. Andrew, you came up, you've got a unique experience. You came up and you referenced your debut was at 20, and then you won the Rookie of the Year, the Calder Trophy, at 23. But by and large, right, people see a lot of skaters come up, even at the best, 18 and 19, and make immediate impacts. It does seem like it takes longer to master the craft of goalie compared to other positions. But that only lends itself to people still getting impatient. They see a talent like Askarov and they're like, he's ready. But why do you think goalie play in particular is that much tougher to master? And we see a lot of late bloomers who come up at 25, 26 even, and have great long careers.
You can't hide. You can't change your role either. As a younger guy, even a Connor Bedard, right? Like you take the youngest and the best as an example. He's not scoring every single night, and there's certain nights where he can figure it out on the PK, or he can just be bad, and it's really not a big deal. Where as a goaltender, you're bad, you're losing, and the team's losing, and the pressure's on, and then it's hard to go back to that. It's hard to keep your confidence up. So I think the big thing is teams, organizations want to stay a little more patient because you really want to be sure that the guys had those games, those reps in the minors, because you can't hide him in the National Hockey League. But also, it's just so the margin is so thin for goaltenders. And UC Saros is considered an elite NHL goaltender, but if he makes one less save a week, then he's average. It's one shot on every 100, you go from a 92 save percentage to a 91 save percentage, and you're just average. So that the fact that you're so important as a goaltender, but also that the margin is so thin, really lends itself to having older, experienced guys rather than the young crew.
So, Andrew, UC Saros is unique, right, with his size, his background, and he's got elite seasons in the regular season. What people here look at is they say, well, he hasn't taken them on a run yet. And here he is. They're talking a lot about the extension of a contract. And there are those that are saying, you know, because they heard the trade rumors, hey, maybe they should trade Saros. They've got a scar off. But it does seem like the message from the team is they would like to re-up with UC Saros. They believe he's elite. From afar, what is your scouting report of Saros?
Yeah, I think he's elite as well. I think because of, and again, I think of that he's elite because of the consistency, because of the amount of games he's played, his ability to, last season, let's say, at the end of last season, right, he basically carried the young group in front of him. He was, and got them really close to the playoffs. The argument of playoff runs is somewhat separate, I think. You see Stuart Skinner. You see Darcy Kemper. You see Aiden Hill. These guys, the last few years, winning Stanley Cups, haven't been considered elite. And I think it's hard. The game's different now. Back in Sebastian Giguere in 03, you go back in the old days where goalies would go on runs and you couldn't score on them. Now there's 5-on-3 power plays in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Guys are scoring and winning 5-4. So I think what happens in front of you, it makes it so much harder to win in the National Hockey League now, especially come playoff time, that you can't just look at Saros and say, I think it's a little unfair, I guess, is the way I look at it. I look at Bobrovsky up until, you know, 2 years ago or 18 months ago, they thought he was dead in Florida. And now he's got a great team in front of him. He goes on 2 Stanley Cup runs, and now he's a Hall of Famer again. So you need a lot in front of you to go on a Stanley Cup playoff run now. And I'm not necessarily sure that Saros has had that support in front of him the last playoff runs that he's been a part of.
I think that's fair. And so, Andrew, the other part of the equation is in a hard salary cap, there are those that say, well, you got to give him a raise. He's a great bargain at 5. But if you're paying him, say, around $8 million, oh, boy, you just use the examples of other teams that have been able to win without paying their goalie that kind of money, even though I think the market is going
to
reset with Shesterkin and Ottinger and guys that you know
well. You have to be pretty special, right? You have to be right. Like Luongo. You played with Luongo. Yeah. You got to pay those guys.
So I guess the question is a guy like that worth it? Do you say yes, invest in the goalie, even if teams have one without the quote-unquote elite goalie?
Yeah, I think when you have one, you still want it. And that's the thing. Like it's easy to say, well, these teams are winning without them, so why don't we get rid of ours? Yeah. But
and then you look at the Devils that just lost everything because they couldn't get a goalie to make a save.
You still need a goalie making saves 82 times of a season, and you still want to, first and foremost, get into the playoffs. And that's what an elite goaltender does for you. It almost makes it automatic. If you have an okay team in front of an elite goalie, you're going to get in the playoffs and then see what happens. So, you know, and again, the other thing that can happen, well, two things. One, the cap's going up a lot over the next 10 years, you know, barring another pandemic. And I think $8 million won't feel like a lot. Well, yeah, no kidding. I was tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, I said it just to make sure that it never happens again. It's ridiculous. And so the cap, I don't know if $8 million or $9 million, whatever he's going to get, is actually a lot in 5 or 6 years. And if your team is at that point and Askarov is that in 4 or 5 years, then you can trade a guy like Saros and have your $5 million guy and find another $3 or $4 million for your roster.
That's a great point. Great point. Can we get Razor back to like my line of questioning?
Absolutely.
I'm sick and tired of talking about goalies. Good Lord. Yeah. A bunch of targets back there. They just clean up our mess.
Yeah, <that's laughs> right.
Keep your mouth shut. Awesome. So yeah. we were talking before you came on. We were talking about, first of all, you know, guys you hated to play against. Is there anyone you can think of that you just hated to play against? And then, you know, we were talking about best guy to go have a beer with. Do you have NHL guys that fit those two categories?
Well, you know, you're setting yourself up for some love for that one.
Yeah, I better be one of your. I'm coming up soon. I better have a beer ready for me.
Yeah, of course, and you know that's the case, and you know that there's basically no one dragged me out the same way that you did. So I really had no other choice but to hang out and have.
I get that.
I pay his wife handsomely to take him out.
yeah, right. She loves you. So yeah, skills, he's at the top of my list there, and that's the God's honest truth. If he wasn't, I would enjoy saying so right to his face, but it wasn't. Hal is the best, and I mean, as a goalie, like, I think of like a Nashville guy, Shea Weber. Like, that's just no fun having him take slap shots on you. You know, like, everybody else, like, if guys score goals on you, it's okay. It's just no fun getting hit in the collarbone by a Shea Weber power play one-timer.
No idea where it's going to go.
No, exactly. And it's coming high. 1,000,000% it's coming high, and you have to stand in there. So I think of the Shea Weber type guys were no fun to play against.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. All right, Andrew, before we let you go, are we going to see a game 7? What do you think?
My heart is really hoping for it, but my head's saying Florida closes this out. They're not good. They can't lose 3 in a row in the Stanley Cup Finals. They're too good. I think Florida gets on the road and they find a way tonight, but I'm really hoping for a 7.
I'm leaning your way, but game 7.
Florida's a better team. They should win. But come on, give us a 7. Give us a game 7.
We want the drama.
Yeah.
We want it.
Andrew, great stuff. Enjoy listening to you. You're off and on right when we're done with our show. I flip it on and you're on with Steve Koulias. It is interesting how many times, whether it's you co-hosting or somebody else, that Hal's name pops up. I don't know if Hal has like this underground payment system to keep like PR.
I took Koulias out for a couple beers and we've been buddies ever since. And
he's got a system somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget, Skillsy's like old as dirt, so he's been around forever. That he's just like crossed paths with everybody at this point. But yes, he is Cooley's darling. There's no question.
Don't say that about me.
All right.
Where do you see the old hips coming out of the truck when I land in Boston? That drive up there, you want to see a fossil move? Watch me.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot for your perspective. Great stuff.
Thanks, Razor.
Have a great weekend, guys. Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk to you down the road. Andrew Raycroft, excellent analyst. I really enjoyed his perspective.
That was, you know what, that's a good point. If you have him. Saros, Askarov, it's a good point. If you give Askarov 30 games, it's something I didn't really think about. But moving forward, you have two great goalies and –
you can keep them for a while.
And the salary cap,
that's what I've always said.
You're assuming the salary cap's going to go up. So you talked about percentage of salary. You know, it's not as much. It gets lower as the years go on. So that's certainly something to think about.
We'll get back into this conversation with some things that we heard from Andrew Raycroft and some things we've compiled over the week.
He's going to be so happy he said something I didn't know.
So we had great perspective from Raycroft on the goalies. We had Elliot Friedman yesterday with the market.
Yeah.
And Scott Nickel with our update where he, you know, some really good stuff on the Milwaukee guys. Are they close to being ready? Askarov being part of that equation. So we're going to try to put it all together as we set the table for some big moves. And one of the big things, we're going to play it when we come back. Elliot Friedman kicking around the league. He says, I always make phone calls before I come on with you guys to see what kind of pulse I get, and he got one theme back about how busy the Predators are going to be. We'll play the clip for you when we come back. Just getting started. We're talking hockey. If you want to join us, you got hockey questions, Predators questions. What'd you think of what Andrew Raycroft said there? 615-737-1025. We're coming back with more after this.